Last week, we had looked at what is probably the most well-known sin of Sodom and Gomorrah, that being homosexuality. But that wasn't the only sin of that city, of those cities on the plain there. There are certainly other sins as well, and Ezekiel shares some of those with us in the scripture that was read to us a few moments ago. The reason that this is important to us is that the sins of Sodom are America's sins too. It's not unusual. What we find in the book of Ezekiel is that the sins of Sodom were Israel's sins, and they were Judah's sins, because they're quite honestly some of the most common sins that people become involved in. And we're going to look at those briefly this morning. Imagine what life in Sodom was like. We have that little section in Genesis 19 where we see that as Lot had these two visitors come into his home, that the men from all over Sodom came and surrounded his house demanding that he bring those visitors out to them so that, in essence, they could rape those men. That's what they really wanted to do. Now, King James puts it, you know, so that we may know them. But what that really means is they wanted to have sexual relations with these men against their will. We would call that rape today. And as disturbing as that is, imagine what it must have been like for Lot and his family to live in that city, in that environment, day in and day out. Ron pointed out to me, I kind of jokingly said last week I wasn't too sure how righteous Lot was. But the truth of the matter is the Bible does say that Lot was righteous. And it says, though, that righteous Lot vexed his soul. You know, there's something about being in a corrupt environment day in and day out that is very vexing to the soul, isn't it? It tries your soul. Because your soul is desirous of good things if you're a righteous person. And to be surrounded by wickedness. But imagine how much Lot knew about this city, because when these men came to the city, and he did not know that they were angels. You've got to remember, he just saw two strangers come to town. Strangers. They weren't anyone he knew. And he pressed upon them to come and stay at his home. Why did he do that? Well, part of it was hospitality, and we're going to study on hospitality. But part of it was just that he was that kind of a person, a hospitable person. But the other side of that coin as well is that he knew how wicked the people of Sodom were. He knew that those two men would not be safe. Now, as wicked as things are, I dare say that probably somebody could set up a tent in the town square here in Butler and sleep in that tent, and other than the police would probably come along and run them off. But as far as their safety, I doubt that they would be attacked and harmed. They would probably be able to sleep through the night safely. Most nights, at least. Oh, yeah, we know that bad things happen. But imagine, Lot knew that the wickedness in the city he lived in was so bad that these men would be in danger. In fact, they were in danger even though they were at his house. The people were, they wanted to break the door down to get into him. And it wasn't just one thief or one person that was high or doped up on drugs. It was people from all over the city. Can you imagine what a wicked place that was? So we talk about how bad things are, but we know it hasn't reached that level yet in this country. there are bad things that happen, and there are bad people out there. But for the most part, most of the time, we're fairly safe. And I know there are dangers, and there are wicked people out there. And you know, we lock our doors at night. We understand that, but it's not to the level that it was in Sodom and Gomorrah. But let's look at what led to this city being so wicked. Ezekiel 16, 49 and 50 that was read earlier. We just keep that picture in your mind, that if some stranger came to town, you wouldn't trust to send them to the hotel. You would beg them, please, come stay at my house, because you knew you'd feel guilty that their blood would be on your hands if you let them stay anywhere else because you knew how bad things were. Certainly Lot's soul must have been vexed living in such a condition as that. But notice what Ezekiel 16, 49 and 50 says. This was the iniquity or sin. That's what iniquity is. It's sin, wrongdoing, lawlessness, going against God. This was what that sin of your sister Sodom was. This was it. Number one, pride. You know, there are an awful lot of sins that begin with pride. When we begin to think that we have the right to make our own choices and our own decisions more than God, when we get to make the rules, when we get to say what is right and what isn't right instead of listening to God, that's pride. And I know, you know, we talk about sometimes people say, well, I'm so proud of so-and-so, I'm so proud of my children, or these kind of things. We're not talking about that kind of proud. We're talking about an arrogance, a haughtiness that goes so deep within us that we say, I am in the place of God. Now, we don't say it out loud, but we live that way. We don't submit ourselves to God. Instead, we put ourselves in His place to decide what is and isn't right, what is and isn't wrong. And we need to think about what a dangerous situation that is. That was the first thing in the list here with Sodom. It says pride, and then in verse 50 it says, and they were haughty. So pride and haughtiness. Pride and haughtiness lead to a lot of naughtiness. Because when we think that we know better than God knows what we should do, and we reject His counsel, and we reject His word, it's always going to lead us to wrong decisions. Not, and that doesn't mean that every decision everybody ever makes is going to be wrong, but it's going to lead us down a path of making those wrong decisions. Pride is the source of many sins. And what we see in the Bible is that really there are only three sources of sin: the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. Those are the three sins that are out there. Those are the three things that cause us to sin. And the pride of life is often a part of those sins. Even the sins that involve the lust of the eyes and the lust of flesh, pride's a part of it. We see something we want. Well, why do we want it? We want it because we think we deserve it. We think we ought to be able to have anything we want because we're proud and haughty. The word in the Greek and in the Hebrew as well, these words that speak of pride and haughtiness are words that describe being lifted up, soaring way up high. In other words, we're thinking more highly of ourselves than we ought to think. And any time we put ourselves in the position of God, we are thinking more highly than we ought. We know we don't belong there. Romans 1, verses 21 and 22 talks about this. Verse 21 says, because that when they knew God, They knew, he's talking about a time where people knew God. They knew he existed. They knew he was real. When they knew God, they glorified him not as God, neither were thankful. You see the attitude problem here? It's a matter of pride. See, if I think I deserve something, I'm not going to be thankful for it. I'm going to think, well, that's what I deserved. And some people treat God that way. Instead of being thankful to him for every breath they take, being thankful to him for every day they get to live, being thankful to him for every ability that they have, instead of that kind of attitude of thankfulness, they talk about how they've done this, and I've done that, and this and the other. Look at Nebuchadnezzar in Daniel chapter 4, verses 30 and 35. Look what happens with him. Here he is. King spake and said, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty?" You hear the arrogance there? You hear the pride? Now, we may not make speeches like this, but there are a lot of times that we feel that way about things. We are so proud of what we've done, what we've accomplished by our power, by our might. Me, 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 I. Remember the rich fool? The rich fool was building up bigger barns. I will say to myself, and on and on, I, me, me, me. Selfish, self-centered, proud and haughty. We've got to watch out for those attitudes, because they will lead us down the same path that they led the people of Sodom down. That's the first thing that's listed, pride. And then being haughty is mentioned as well. So they had a double dose of this arrogant attitude that caused them a problem. But then we see something that's a little more disturbing probably than that to us. Notice what the next phrase there is. This was the sin. Now this was their sin. This was the iniquity. Fullness of bread and abundance of idleness was in her and her daughters. Fullness of bread. Abundance of idleness. Now let's think for a minute what most of us in America work for. What is our goal in life? To be able to be full. To be able to have whatever we want. To be able to fulfill our appetites. And to be able to have free time. To be able to have time to enjoy life. To have time for entertainment and recreation. That's what our goal is. That's what we want. To be able to look forward to, a lot of people want to retire early. I want to retire by the time I'm 40. You think, retire by the time you're 40? How are you going to do that? But that's the kinds of things that people look forward to. That's what they want to do. They want to have an abundance of idleness and fullness of bread. Sodom got it. That's what they had. They had abundant wealth and idleness. Abundant. They didn't go to bed hungry. They didn't probably even wake up hungry. They had so much. Abundance. Fullness of bread. They probably never got hungry. Some of us, a lot of us don't really experience hunger very often. Not really. I mean, we'll say, "Oh, it's coming up on 12 o'clock. I'm hungry. It's lunchtime." We're not really hungry. We just know it's getting close to the time we usually eat. Now, if you had the doctor tell you, "Okay, you can't eat for 24 hours before this test or something like that. And you go 24 hours, then you go, I'm dying here. You're not dying. One day without food won't kill you. But that's the way we feel, because we've never experienced hunger like that, a lot of us. I don't know what it's like to be hungry, really hungry. But that was part of the problem, Sodom. Now we've got to understand that money and time are not inherently sinful. So, I mean, just the fact that they had plenty of food and had plenty of time, that in and of itself was not their sin. So what does he mean here? What was it about this fullness of bread and abundance of idleness that made it sinful? Well, what we've got to understand is, if we have abundance, if we have wealth, if we have an abundance of time, then how do we spend those things? How do we use those things? See, the misuse of them is what's sinful. Abraham was a very wealthy man. Job was a very wealthy man, and yet they were righteous. Abraham had time to be sitting out under a tree when the Lord came with those two angels when they were on their way to Sodom. I mean, he wasn't out there in the sun working. He was sitting, resting under the shade of the tree. But they didn't condemn him for that. And yet when they come to Sodom, we say, wait, an abundance of idleness. But what did Abraham do with his idle time there? Here he was resting. Here came some strangers down the road. He got up and went to meet them and said, come and sit and rest and let me fix you something. Let me be hospitable to you. What did the men of Sodom do with the abundance of their idle time? They went out to try to commit abominations and rape and probably murder. And that would have been the logical conclusion of what they would have gone after by the end of the night. I'm sure those two, if they had been just men and not angels, and those men of Sodom had gotten a hold of them, they wouldn't have escaped alive. See, it's what you do with your spare time. We all have a desire to have some spare time. But what are we doing with it? Are we doing things that lead to wickedness and sin? Or are we doing things that are profitable for us? You know, we may take a little time to read something. Are we going to read something that's going to help us? That's going to make us a better person? It's going to give us some knowledge we didn't have before? Or are we going to read something that's going to take us down the road of having sinful thoughts? We may have some time, we may want to engage in some recreation. Well, what recreation are we going to engage in? Are we going to go out and play some basketball or go for a walk or enjoy the world that goes, you know, go out for a nature walk or something? No. Or are we going to go out and get drunk? Or go out dancing and lusting after others? You know, what are we going to do with that time? See, it's not that having the time is a sinful thing. It's what we do with it. Luke chapter 12. In verses 16 through 21, we see what this rich man did. It wasn't because he was wealthy that was the problem. It was because he was not going to do anything good with his wealth. He was going to store that grain up in a barn. Now, all of us probably try to go, when we go to the grocery store, we buy some groceries and we buy enough that we can take it home and put some in the freezer for the next day or maybe even for next week. Some people go and they buy their groceries for the whole month, and then they take it home, put it in the refrigerator, put it in the freezer, and use that for the whole month. Okay, that's good. That's fine. But this man was going to build bigger barns to put things in that were things that were perishable. Grains and fruits. These are things that are perishable. How much was he going to eat? Well, he wasn't just storing it up for him to have enough to eat. He wasn't thinking, well, I'll need something to eat next week. No, he's storing it up. More. Notice what he says. Thou hast much good laid up for many years. In other words, what he said was, I've worked till now, I can sit back and not have to work anymore, not have to do anything, and I'll have that. But that's not going to last forever. That's going to spoil. Eventually. Why not share that with those, you know, sell it, use it, share it, do something good with it, and then next year, harvest another crop. See, it wasn't that he didn't have any barns. He already had some barns, but he tore those barns down so he could build bigger ones. We've got to think about what we do with our wealth, with our free time. We will have to give an account for them. Sodom had to give an account for them. Because of the way that they misused theirs, God took them away. He destroyed them. And America is certainly one of the richest nations in the world. Even at a difficult time when our economy is struggling like it is right now, we're still one of the richest nations in the world. Even during the time of the Great Depression in this country, America was one of the richest nations in the world. At a time when people... that people really were hungry. But still, we were one of the richest nations in the world at that time. What are we going to do with our wealth? Oh, we've created so many time-saving devices. They have microwave ovens and dishwashers and clothes washers and cars so we can get from here to there so fast. And yet, sometimes it seems like we have less time now than our ancestors did 100 years ago or 200 years ago, when they actually had time to talk with the neighbors and help a neighbor out. Well, I'm too busy. I don't have time to... Why is that? And then when we do have time, what do we do with it? We want to lounge on the couch. Maybe go to a movie, go to a ball game. But there's not anything inherently wrong with doing any of those things in and of themselves. But if that's how we spend all of our free time, then we're following down the same path that Sodom followed down. That's what they did. They abundance of idleness was in her and in her daughters. Do you realize that 100 years ago, teenagers didn't think about getting to play video games and, you know, I'm just going to go out and spend all day playing basketball or football or this, that, or the other, and I'm going to go to the mall and walk around all day shopping. They didn't do that kind of thing. They were working right along with the rest of the family. They didn't have much free time. But we have wanted to... We want to give our children all the things we never had, seems like. And so we want them to have all the free time. They need to learn to work. Those are the things that are going to help them be good, upstanding citizens. We have a serious problem in our society in that our people are obsessed with entertainment and recreation. In fact, so many places of employment can't get a good day's work out of anybody because they spend half their time checking their email and the other half of their time playing some sort of computer game on their computers, and they can't get a good work out of them. And then you go to a place, you know, a convenience store or something like that where they don't have computers, but they spend half their time sitting watching the cars go by and the other half sitting gossiping with somebody. And they won't get their work done. It's okay for us to have some free time as a reward for our labors, but we got to do the labors part. We've got to get the work done. But our society is obsessed. Billions of dollars every year in the entertainment industry. Billions and billions of dollars. Billions of dollars in sports. Billions of dollars in concerts. Billions of dollars in movies. Billions of dollars in television. Billions of dollars in computer games and all these kinds of things. Billions. You add all those billions up. You add all that up, we probably didn't need that big bailout the government did. I could have spent those billions of dollars. But we were obsessed with being entertained all the time. Abundance of idleness. It's a dangerous situation. And then we see that they had a serious problem with selfishness and a lack of concern for the needy. Notice what it says. Aside from the abundance of idleness, neither did she strengthen the hand of the poor and needy. There were some poor and needy there, but because of their selfishness and because of their lack of concern, they didn't do anything to help those who were truly in need. It always amazes me, all of these politicians who are hollering at us that we ought to be more generous, and so they're going to raise taxes or whatever to take money and give it to somebody to the poor. But in their own personal life, they don't give anything to help anybody. They're all for taking everybody else's money and giving it to somebody, but they won't spend their own, and they're some of the wealthiest people in the country. But they won't spend their own money. I see the reports on some of them, less than one half of 1% of their millions of dollars do they give to any charitable work. Won't give anything. Selfishness. It's always easier to look at others and say, well, this is what they ought to do. So what about me? What do I do when I see somebody who's truly in need? Now, I'm not talking about somebody who just wants something. I'm talking about somebody who really does have a need. Because even in a wealthy nation like the United States, people do sometimes have needs, real needs. Just like some of the people in Sodom had some real needs. There were poor and needy. But Sodom, the people who had the wealth in Sodom, they didn't care about the poor and the needy. Selfish desires lead to sin. James 1:14-15 tells us that we are drawn away by our own lust. We often will spend a lot of money on something that is not something we need, but it's something we want. But then we won't spend a nickel to help somebody else out with something that they need. Now, I know Alex has said a number of times, somebody who works hard ought to have some of the things they want. And that's true. We should be able to have some things we want. But if we get everything we want and we never help anybody else, we're going to be miserable. It's not going to make us happy. Some of the most miserable people in the world are some of the wealthiest, stingiest people in the world. Wealth doesn't bring happiness. Jesus said it's more blessed, or in other words, it'll make you happier to give than to receive. Now, there are a lot of good wealthy people as well. We talk about Job and Abraham. There are good wealthy people today. There are a lot of wealthy people who give a lot of money for mission works and various different things, and they help the poor. And you know, you see sometimes some of the things that wealthy people do. You know, they establish big trust funds to help fight cancer or to help with this research or that or the other thing. And that's good. I'm glad there are still some good people. But I tell you what, we're heading more and more down this road like Sodom was going, where there are less and less of those people who are generous and more of them who are stingy. It's always interesting to me, as I looked at the statistics, the state with the highest rate, highest percentage of charitable giving. You know what state that is? It's right over there. It's Mississippi. The poorest state in the country. But they have the highest percentage of charitable giving. You know what's at the bottom of the list? Massachusetts. One of the wealthiest states in the country. And they're at the bottom of the list. See, just having wealth doesn't mean you're a generous giving type individual. And not having wealth doesn't mean that you can't give. What did Paul say to those of Macedonia? Gave out of their poverty. See, we've got to understand that whatever we have, we need to have the loving and giving attitude. The attitude is so important. 2 Corinthians 8, 12 through 15. For if there be first a willing mind, see, that's the first thing we've got to have. We've got to be willing. But then notice what he says. It is accepted according to that a man has, and not according to that he doesn't have. For he hath not, the King James says. God knows whether we can or can't give. But if we have the willing mind, God's going to accept it if we've got the right attitude. There may be some who it's a struggle for them to give anybody anything because they're having trouble taking care of their own needs. They're the poor and needy. God knows that. He accepts that. He understands that. There may be others who have. They need to give. And then the fourth thing, and we're not going to spend time on this one because we dealt with it last week, but sexual immorality and abominations were a huge problem in the city of Sodom. Homosexuality certainly was one of them, Genesis 19, 4 through 13, that we've talked about already. That was one of the big problems that they had there in Sodom. But if you read, there are a lot of horrible sins that are included in the term abominations. Proverbs 6, 16 through 19 gives us seven things that are an abomination to God. But that's certainly not an exhaustive list. There are several other things, certain types of idolatry and all. In other words, God doesn't give us a list of all of the horrible things Sodom did. When he says, and they committed abomination before me, he said, you know what? Every wicked thing they think of, they did it. They did everything they could do that was against my will. They committed abomination. And you know, we live in a society like that today. We live in a society where there are some people who are just trying to think of ways to do something against God. A certain humanist organization has started a campaign in Washington, D.C. Don't know if you've heard about this. The religious world is all obsessed with Christmas being the birth of Christ and so on and so forth. So they chose this time to start an ad campaign to say, why believe in God? Be good for goodness sake. And they get somebody dressed in a little Santa hat, you know, there. But why believe in God? They are so happy that they don't believe in God that they want everybody else to not believe in God too, I guess. They're spending millions of dollars to try to convince people to not believe in God. That's disturbed. You know, it's one thing for them to not believe in God themselves, but to spend millions of dollars to try to convince others. Don't believe in God. But the best answer to that, of course, is when they say, be good for goodness sake. If there's no God, how do you define good? Without God, there is no good. There is no good and evil. It's just whoever has the most power or the majority or whatever can get away with or whoever has the most money, then that's okay. Might makes right and all that kind of thing. If there's no God, there is no good. No way to define it. But we need to realize that our society is headed in the wrong direction. As Christians, we're to be the light of the world. We're to be the salt of the earth. Let's not wait until we're in the situation that Lot was, where we're the only righteous person in town. Let's make the influence while there's still enough of us to make an influence. Can you imagine? Abraham said, "Well, Lord, if you find 50 righteous people." We have 50 people in our congregation. If we'll be righteous, and if we'll let our light shine, and if we will season this county with our salt, we can save this county. I don't mean that everybody's going to become a Christian, but we can preserve this town and this county by our righteousness. But we've got to be righteous first. See, one of Lot's problems was he didn't even have all the folks in his own family on his side. He was a little reluctant himself. When they started dragging him, they had to take him by the hand and drag him out of town, because they were going to destroy, God was going to destroy the city. We've got to be the influence we need to be. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation, if you're not a Christian, you need to become one. If you're not on God's side, you're on Satan's side. If you believe that Jesus is the Son of God, then act like it. Repent of your sins. Confess Him as the Son of God. And be baptized to wash your sins away. What are you waiting for? If you're here and you are a Christian, but perhaps you've gotten caught up in some of these problems, pride, selfishness, wrong use of wealth and time, you may have gotten caught up in those sins. You may need to repent of that before you travel down the road that Sodom traveled down. Because the next time, it's not just going to be one city that gets destroyed with fire. It's going to be the whole world. And anyone who's not right with God is going to be cast in the lake of fire. If you're here and you have a need to respond to the invitation, we ask that you do so as we stand and as we sing.